In all honesty, I've not heard the Bill and Wendy theme for the stream before. I've been on the stream as a guest, but I've not heard that before. I'll tell you, I'm going to get into trouble perhaps for saying this, but I've worked with so many radio performers. Some are so talented, so entertaining. At the top of that list when it comes to entertainment value, Bill and Wendy. They are, so I am particularly honored to fill in for them on WGN Radio. This is The Stream, and I am not alone. In the studio with me is my oldest friend ever. Notice I did not say oldest and dearest like they do. He's not the dearest.
Yeah, that's who's more dear than me?
That's what I said. He's the oldest friend I have, Mr. Paul Lisnick.
Doctor to you.
It's true. You are a doctor.
Colonel,
actually.
Too.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am.
What?
I'm a Kentucky colonel.
I really am.
Because you ate fried chicken once in Kentucky?
But you know what? Colonel Sanders, that's the kind of colonel he was. He was a Kentucky colonel. Do you not know what that is?
I do not have any idea.
It's legit. I didn't know either. It's legitimate. It happened when I turned an earlier age. And
when you were, it was
arranged. Some people pulled some strings. It's an honor given by the state of Kentucky, by the governor of Kentucky. So one day I get these business cards in the mail saying Colonel Paul Lisnick, and I'm like, "Was a joke, you know, whatever."
Come on.
And then somebody said, "No, it was a judge." I shouldn't say that, I guess, but it was some judge, whatever, who just kind of made some contacts and got them. Whoopi Goldberg is a Kentucky colonel.
She's a colonel.
Yes, LBJ was a Kentucky colonel. Eisenhower. And Colonel Sanders was that kind of Kentucky colonel.
Whoopi Goldberg and Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, you know what I get for it?
I could tell you what you should get.
I get to go to the Kentucky Derby every year, like, and wear a hat.
Have you ever done that?
No. I also can buy things like that have the, because you get a badge every year. I do donate. They do good things. It's philanthropy. So I do donate, and every year I like give my kids the badge that I get, you know, kind of thing. Although if I was wearing it, I totally should have worn it on my shirt, because then I would look like one of those, you know, generals in North Korea that just has millions of things on their jackets.
I want to see you one day wearing your colonel. Is it a uniform?
No. It's just, you just get the
badge.
Yeah, it's just the badge.
So you're like Barney Fife then, walking around.
Yeah.
I did not know.
In many ways, actually. Hey, happy anniversary, Stephen.
Well, thank you very much.
This is really one of 20 years.
So it's true.
You're at WGN.
Yeah. So I wake up this morning. I look online because everybody does.
You look at your feeder, didn't you?
Yeah. And I go to Bob Feeder's column, which I'm a subscriber. So
sure.
Robert Feeder's column pops in.
Right.
Yes. And, I see my picture in there. And then I thought,
I thought you were dead. I thought, I've been waiting.
Really?
I thought either that or he was reprinting a column from the 60s.
So I'm looking, and he writes about my 20th year on WGN Radio. And that's one of the nicest surprises ever.
He finds out, you know, I had surgery last year, and I opened Feeder one day, and there's my picture, and they're talking about me having surgery, you know, just hernia surgery. How does he find these things out?
Facebook.
Oh.
About your surgery.
Well,
because every step of the way, here's a picture of me walking into the hospital.
No.
Here's a picture of me now in the waiting room waiting for the doctor. Here's a picture
I'm
of the doctor.
Scared.
I am now in the wheelchair as they wheel me in for this surgery. And what I want to know is that the plastic surgery didn't seem to take.
No, but I thought it was nice of you to come and visit. I thought it was a little strange. I didn't know why you put the gown on. And stood with your back to me. I'm like, Steve, I don't need to see that here. And you're just visiting.
So we should
have just brought me, you know, flowers.
We really should explain. Paul and I are personal friends. We are old friends. We've known one another
since I was born and you were in college.
That's not exactly how I was going to put it, but we've known one another since we were very little kids.
Yeah.
Very little.
I will
kids.
Never say the years, but
no, don't.
No, but it's been a long time.
And it's funny that we wind up working in the media.
Know, and here we lived in this townhouse complex. I was B, you were D, and you have no memory of everything that I remember, and I have no memory of what you remember.
That's true.
But we do have our own individual memories, like me hitting you in the head, playing the Three Stooges, apparently with a hammer. I have no memory. I don't know why you have a memory of that, because that should have blocked out your memory. But I don't remember doing that. I remember you wanted to do broadcasts since you were a kid. I remember when I moved with my family, and you and I would talk on the phone at night, and we'd put on the Hawks game. I'm not a big sports guy, but you are. And you would do the play-by-play with me on the phone. So I had to kind of learn hockey so I could, like, be your friend.
We had a radio station when You had tape recorders that were cassette recorders.
Well, if you call it Dixie cups and a string, a radio station, yeah, back then.
That's about what it was. And it was WKKS radio. I remember that.
That was real?
Well, reel into my tape recorder.
Yeah, oh, okay. Oh, you were recording into your tape recorder.
Yes. You never knew that till now.
Well, you used to give me the 8 tracks of it, but I never actually played them.
He probably thought we were really on the air. And the thing about Paul is, even then I received an invoice. And
yeah.
We were just, but we turned down the sound on the television.
Right, and I had to listen to you.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I didn't turn down. Remember, you were in your home and I was in mine, so
yeah.
I actually wasn't listening to you.
How do you remember? I don't remember doing
Lloyd
this.
I was Lloyd Pettit doing the, I don't know. I think it might be for you. Memory goes as you get older. I think that explains why you're having some issues here.
Lloyd Pettit was the greatest.
Vince
Scully, that would be, Vince Lloyd, that
Vince
would be
Lloyd.
Baseball.
Yeah. Oh, wait, but who was with Lloyd Pettit then?
I think he did it alone. Back then.
I thought it was with Vince Lloyd, because that's the name.
No. Vince Lloyd did baseball with Lou Boudreau.
Maybe somebody will call in with the right... he did, but I thought he was also... anyway, it doesn't... Those were the days.
But
I might be dating us once I start saying those names. People might actually know where to put this in time.
Well, your time.
Right.
So you are here actually to talk about two of your passions.
You didn't even say what I do. You don't... I mean, can I plug my show?
All right, go ahead.
So I'm the political analyst over at WGN-TV, so people who watch The Morning Show, which is the number one show from like 4 a.m. till 10 a.m. It's number one.
Yes.
I cover politics, doing political segments, but every night on CLTV, I do a show called Politics Tonight. You've been on there. Whenever I can possibly craft a pet topic or an animal topic, I say, Steve, come on on, and you always do. You got nothing else going on, so you come over. And that's every weeknight at 5:30, replays at 10.
Uh-huh.
And I do a podcast here at WGN.
You do?
WGNplus.com. I do. It's called Behind the Curtain. That's why you sort of previewed us earlier by talking about, we'll talk about politics and theater. Because that's what I do in the podcast. It's another passion of mine. People that sort of only know me for politics sometimes don't realize that I also do a show on Comcast, which is called Backstage. So I do a lot of theater work. I absolutely have a passion for theater, and so this world allows me to do both.
Well, it's 12:21. Thank you very much, Paul.
No,
thank you for joining us. You're done. No, we'll be back, and we'll actually talk.
I haven't begun.
That's the thing, and we'll actually talk about these things. We'll talk about theater. We will talk about a person that you were going to have on your podcast who just passed away.
Yeah, sad
and,
too.
Yeah,
really excited about that.
Yeah, so it's sad. We'll talk about.
It is not you. It was a different celebrity.
Was not me. We'll talk about Rosemarie.
Yeah.
From the Dick Van Dyke Show. And I want to talk about the year in politics, which means we're going to be here for 7 or 8 hours. So don't go away. Steve Dale for Bill and Wendy on WGN. WGN Radio, Steve Dale for Bill, for Wendy Snyder. I am here with Paul Lisnick, who's reminding me of stories from... well, years and years ago that I knew nothing about. You could tell the story.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so you know, I was filling in hosting on WGN Radio this week, doing the business hour at 5 a.m. in the morning last week. I was going to call you to join me, but I know you're just, you know, you're not quite up yet.
I would have.
Well, you've told me in the past there's a Golden Girls line in there about IP at 7, but I'm not up till 8. Anyway.
What's he talking about?
I'll let that go. But anyway, this week I was doing the noon hour. Come on, Jen. She knows the truth. Anyway, so I was talking to Ben Cortez.
Ben Cortez!
Your engineer, my engineer. I find
Everyone's
myself yelling
engineer.
His name now when I see
Good.
Him. And he reminded me of years ago.
Used to work at another radio station.
That's right. And I think that's where that happened.
Years ago. I mean, long time ago.
And I think you were
ago.
Still living at home.
Could be.
You may have already been married, but you were still living at home with your mother, as far as I know.
I was about 18, I think,
well,
at that
you know,
time.
I know Robin didn't want you to move in. But anyway, so apparently you left the house and you left the milk out on the kitchen table. Just, you know, it could happen.
Yeah.
But your mother was angry about that. And I guess she noticed it after you left and she called in on the radio station, and I think Ben said he took the phone call. She wanted to yell at you for leaving the milk out. Oh, you're on the air doing whatever you're doing, but she wanted to yell at you for leaving the milk out. So you know what? Apparently, Ben never allowed that call to go through. So on behalf of your mom, Marilyn, I've known her my whole life, love her dearly.
Yeah.
I want you to please let her know, just in case she's not hearing us, that I have finally yelled at you for leaving the milk out on the table.
I deserve it. I know. I know.
And I hope you never did it again.
I've never done it again. It's amazing that I still have you on the air as a guest after these stories. I know. But actually, you do a podcast here at WGN.
Yeah.
It's called Behind the Curtain.
Mm-hmm, I do.
And as a part of that podcast, the most recent version of that podcast, you were supposed to talk to, you had an interview all set up with...
Yeah, with Rose Marie, the great, I think most people know who she is, but she, of course, was Sally Rogers in the Dick Van Dyke Show. That's how I knew her as well. They're making a movie. They made a movie. They finished it about a month or two ago called Wait for the Laugh. It's now become kind of known as the Rose Marie movie. So actually, if people go to WGNplus.com, my current podcast, we're actually running it for 2 weeks because of what happened. Well, it'll be there beyond that, but letting it be the podcast for 2 weeks. I interviewed, I was supposed to interview her about the movie, and she had taken a fall. I talked to her agent, and I were in touch, and so it was all sort of very last minute. But in the end, it was, she's just, we've canceled everything in her schedule. She can't, we can't do anything until after the Christmas, period. Because what happened was she fell, she hurt herself, and then they found internal bleeding. Mm. They thought she'd be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, because she couldn't do it, Peter Marshall, filled in, right? Hollywood Squares host. And so I was kind of excited about that. They've been lifelong friends.
So Peter Marshall, she was off in the middle square, wasn't she, on Hollywood Squares?
Well, that was Paul Lynde. So she wasn't, Paul Lynde was always the middle square. She was, I couldn't tell you which corner she was in. She was a corner square, but she was a regular. But they knew each other even aside from that.
Yeah.
And, because he knew her husband, which, well, here's the point. Jason Wise is also part of that interview if people listen to it. And,
who's Jason Wise?
He's the director, writer, producer of the movie. Very well. I've seen the movie. Very well done. Opens in Chicago January 12th, I think, and over at Facets on Fullerton.
And what's the movie about? Her life?
Well, it wasn't supposed to be. So when they originally decided to make the movie, it was a movie about sort of entertainment and people sort of making a career in the days, because she goes back to vaudeville in those days.
And there's like nobody that does anymore. And the only reason why I believe she goes back to vaudeville is she began when she was literally...
Baby Rose Marie.
Yeah, baby.
She was 3, 4.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in part of the podcast, I play some of that music when she was a little kid, and which still is around. And then she was Broadway, she was movies, she was television. The reason that it's called Wait for the Laugh... Oh, so Jason Wise, the producer, after they got into her, she was just supposed to be part of the movie. He then realized she is entertainment. There's nobody around anymore who has done what she's done, lived what she's lived. She knew Al Capone.
Jerry Lewis might have been the closest. But
Jerry Lewis,
away.
Actually, who passed away this past year, Jerry Lewis and she were friends. And when her husband, Buddy, became ill and nobody knew what was on, Jerry Lewis called his personal physician and said, you get there and you take care of him. So
her
she did know
name?
Everybody. Was Buddy.
No.
Yeah.
And now, why?
I'm
why
sorry,
am
not
I?
Buddy. Sorry, Bobby.
Okay,
Bobby. I'm sorry.
Because Buddy was Buddy Sorrell,
yeah,
which
right.
was Maury Amsterdam.
Was. No, it was Bobby.
Okay, okay.
It was the love of
why,
her life.
Why did they have a fling?
To
Maury Amsterdam and her.
I don't
is
think
that
so. They were
suggesting?
Close friends.
Yeah.
And he really did that. Lib and all of that. It was just sort of an amazing career. So I think people don't even know about her life on Broadway and in the show Top Banana. There's just so many stories. Eventually, the producer Jason Wise decided this just needs to be about her. That mm-hmm. her life is worth capturing. She did see the film, so she lived long enough to see it, and was doing interviews about it, and that's where this was supposed to come in. But sadly, she passed away yesterday. And
but the film can be seen.
The film will open. It's been around. It's been in Chicago. They just sent me a screener so I could do the interview and, uh-huh. and do it in an intelligent way. And I was incredibly impressed with what her life was and all that she did and all she. As I said, she knew mafia people. She was the beginning of Vegas, so she was on those stages. And there's some great stories where she went up to, you know, one guy and she's like, you know, my check was $12 short. It was Bugsy Siegel that she sang this to. And people are like, Rose, what are you thinking? Do you know who you're talking to? She said, I don't care. He owes me $12. She was tough. And by the way, the reason it was called Wait for Your Line, I started uh-huh. to say before, was because when they did the Dick Van Dyke Show, Van Dyke was a Broadway guy. He wasn't a TV guy. And of course, there's the famous line, which is in the movie, which is when they said, we want you for the show. She said, what's a Dick Van Dyke? And then she brought Maury Amsterdam into the show, who said, what's a Dick Van Dyke? But the bottom line is that Van Dyke didn't know how to play to the television for the laughs. And so she would step in, she'd put his hand out, she'd grab him, she'd go, wait for your laugh, wait for your laugh, and taught him that. And they just decided that was sort of that she was the consummate professional, that she understood how the stage worked, how the audience needed to react. She was a power woman. She was supposed to be the star. In her mind, she was the star of the Dick Van Dyke Show. And there were and we talk in the podcast about how well she did or did not get along with Mary Tyler Moore. I'll let people listen to that. The answer might surprise them.
Hmm. All right. And they can listen on WGN Plus. They yeah. could watch the movie, which is coming to Chicago.
Where- yeah, called Wait for the Laugh. It's not available now. I mean, it's not on DVD or anything yet, but it's coming to Facets Theater on Fullerton.
Yeah.
I think January 12th or 14th, whatever that Thursday is. I'm mm-hmm. not looking at the calendar, but that's the week. And, you know, if you're a Rose Marie fan or you're just a fan of entertainment and the history of entertainment, go see it. Because it's just, it's, I was amazed at all that she's been through. She had a career. To me, she was Sally Rogers from Dick Van Dyke. And boy, did I underestimate the life and the career this woman has had?
All right, Wait for the Laugh is the name of that movie. Jen DeSalvo is here. Jen, Paul Lisnick has been waiting for the laugh.
I would like to point out that when
he's
insult
still
you, she's
waiting.
Right there laughing.
Oh, yeah. When we were talking about you leaving the milk out, I was I was off mic laughing my butt off.
So we haven't even gotten to talk about what we wanted or what I wanted to talk with you about.
You got an agenda.
I do. Politics. 2017 moving into 2018. So we were talking on the air about the tax bill.
Yeah.
These experts in studio, I have no idea what their politics are, right? They are looking at it from a strictly, I think, economic point of view. They say they are optimistic about the economy for 2018. They do believe there is some truth to that trickle-down theory that if we help corporate America, it will help all of us. They think in that regard, maybe only in that regard, I don't know. But in that regard, Trump was right and is right and will help most of Americans eventually. Is it possible for Trump to turn the corner and become, because right now he is the most, I believe, according to polls, the most unpopular president since polls have been taken. Can that change?
Well, absolutely. Things can change on a dime. Look, we could end up, you know, in a tragic situation or a war or something like that, and then polls just change instantly. So, who knows what will happen, transpire. But with regard to the tax plan, look, you know, Nancy Pelosi said, that it's Armageddon. And of course, Paul Ryan said it's exquisite. So somewhere between Armageddon and exquisite is probably what the tax plan is. I realize people could be listening to this stream all over the world. So, at least a national comment, you know, a lot of people will get something out of the tax, plan, out of the new bill. Blue states like Illinois will be hurt, I think. Look, you live in the city, I live in the city, and property taxes are very, very high. So, and by the way, some people say, well, was it a political thing, blue states? Not necessarily. The Senate could only pass something if it had $1.5 trillion a level of debt. It was just a limit. That's the law. They can't go beyond it. So they had to find a way to bring it to $1.5 trillion. One way they did it was get rid of the Obamacare mandate. That was because that actually wasn't intended as an attack on Obamacare, even though it is. They just needed the money. They would tell you, Republicans would say. In addition, it was let's not give people this deduction on property taxes called SALT, state and local taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in most states, nobody cares. I mean, this is, you know, they don't reach 10% anyway, or their taxes aren't that high. But blue states, urban areas, New York City, Los Angeles, property taxes are very high. So that was the issue in terms of people getting hurt next year. Of course, a lot of people, I did it, I don't know if you did, but I paid my property taxes early.
Yeah.
To kind of give me some leeway next year in that $10,000 window. Now, if Democrats take over things in November of next year, they'll probably undo a lot of that because these are bills and they can be undone. But the thing that I think people should remember as well, is that the all of these benefits for individuals like you and me, they're going to expire about 7 years out. They go away. The corporate benefits are permanent. Now, Republicans say, oh, no Congress in its right mind won't extend these in 7 years. I thought no Illinois state legislature in its right mind would get rid of the 7% cap on our property taxes, which it did years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who live in the city, if they sort of wondered why 1 year, I don't know if it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but 1 year we got our property tax bill and you went, oh my, what happened? It's like it doubled. And we all call our property tax lawyers. I did too. And what he said was, you've just been protected by that cap. The cap sunsetted. Springfield didn't keep it. And so now your taxes doubled up or whatever they did. And that's where they're going to be. And that's where they're going to stay. So my point is, sometimes we give legislatures more credit than they deserve in terms of will they step in and help us. So is the tax plan a good thing? A lot of people will benefit. There's no question that wealthy people benefit the most. The average person might get a little bit out of it. And people in blue states may very well get hurt, especially if you live in areas with high property taxes. That's the critical fact. Feature.
Infrastructure was something Trump ran on. We need to, he said, improve our infrastructure. The Democrats actually had been saying that for many years, and Republicans pushed back. Now Trump is saying we need to, and you know what? I don't think they're, forget about politics for a moment, which you cannot do because you're the political guy at WGN-TV and CLTV. But if you do forget about politics for a moment, our infrastructure is in need of help. desperately in need of help in many places. So
nationally, there's no question. Let me tell you why there will be no infrastructure plan. Because Democrats and Republicans, look, everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants a safe country. Everybody wants a vibrant economy. Nobody disagrees. You won't find a Republican or Democrat says, no, I'd like things to go to heck. You know, nobody's going to do that. But they disagree about how to get there. So the reason there won't be an infrastructure bill, I could be wrong, is because the way Democrats want it, they said, all right, let's pony up the federal dollars and let's make this happen around the country and repair bridges and do these roads, sure, make it happen. The Republicans say, you know, I don't think so. I think what we're going to do is we, the feds, we'll give you a little money, but the states, you're going to have to pony up a good amount. And the numbers that I've read have been, you know what, out of a $1 trillion plan, because that's what he's talked about, the feds will give you, say, $250 billion. Give or take. States, you come up with about 800.
But in
million.
A state like ours that has no money, how could that potentially even happen?
That's why there won't be a plan. That's why there won't be an agreement. It can't happen. The states don't have that kind of money. So we certainly don't. And
well,
nobody does.
The other side, if you will, knows that many states don't have that money.
Well, I guess it depends what state you're talking about. And what I mean by that
is, more than half.
Well, the question, clearly in states like Illinois, you're absolutely right. There may be some red states, maybe where budgets are a little bit better, where they could put some money towards that. That's part of the negotiation, Steve. I mean, what's going to have to happen is you can be sure that senators from various states will be very much in tune with what their states can do, and they'll negotiate for numbers that are comfortable for their states. And if you're picturing 100 senators and 50 states and all this kind of stuff, it's very easy to get to the point where when you're President Trump, you go, make an infrastructure plan. And when you're the senators and congressmen going, we can't make this work. Democrats, we need more money from you, feds, or Republicans. Sorry, Dems, get your states to pony up. And it's just a fundamental difference. We all want safe roads. We all want great bridges. We can't get there.
2018, according to Joe Biden, will be the year that people begin running for president. That is when they begin to internally make their own plans, even if the public at that point doesn't know about it. Mm-hmm. Is that true? And if so, who do we look for on the Republican side and on the Democratic side?
So I'm going to answer that, if I could, by putting it in the Illinois context for a moment and the governor's race, because the parallel will be there. In the Illinois governor's race, we've already had J.B. Pritzker running for the last several years now for next year's election.
That's unprecedented, isn't it?
It is.
And the amount of money he has spent. And he's not even, I mean, we're not even anywhere near an election
yet. Our gubernatorial race is going to set a national record for the amount of money spent. I think it's going to hit $300 million, something like that, between Pritzker's money that he has and Bruce Rauner's money. I mean,
I want to circle back to Illinois, but
So my Illinois parallel is to simply say that if you're J.B. Pritzker, you know, how well known was that name? I mean, if you're business people, you know him. But I mean, if you went up to the average Illinoisan, I don't know that they know the name J.B. They might have heard of a Pritzker building somewhere. So he's been spending all this money because he wants to make sure his name is out there. If you're Chris Kennedy, you don't see so many Kennedy ads out because, you know, you have to be living under a rock to not know who the Kennedys are. So my point is, it's name recognition. So you see early money and lots of money spent when somebody has name recognition to build. You see that playing out in the state in that way. And then as time goes on and the chips fall where they may, that's less important. So to answer your question more directly, the reason you will have some people starting to run next year is because if you have a state governor somewhere, somebody who's not on the national platform, you know, if Elizabeth Warren decides to run, she's got pretty good name recognition. She doesn't need to come out so quickly. If Joe Biden decides to throw his hat in, people said that in 2016. He could have waited to the last minute. There was a point of no return, and he went beyond it. But he could have come in later than anybody in that race because he has name recognition. So the people you will start to hear about in the coming year are the people who you don't even, you might because you know what's going on in the world, but a lot of people won't be familiar
with. So Biden has deflected the answer so far. He hasn't positively, to my knowledge, said, I am or I am not running. It seems he'll be maybe of a certain age where people love him or not, but he's got to still want to do it.
Well, I think I believe Donald Trump was the oldest person ever to take the, be inaugurated as
president. Even older than Reagan. Yeah.
And so people, and of course, you know, Reagan was a much older 70 than Trump is, right? I mean, it's a generational thing.
Sure.
Joe Biden, is in his 70s, but I don't think he plays that way. I think he plays young. But you also have a lot of people who just feel like it's time for new blood. That if Democrats are going to take on President Trump, who has just completely turned all the rules on their head, you need somebody vibrant, somebody new. I mean, you need some other Barack Obama person who can energize people the way Obama did. I realize if listeners are not Obama fans, you know, you still have to agree with what I'm saying. You didn't like him, but he sure energized Democrats and he sure energized independents to say, we want something different. It's what President Trump did in this last election. If you are no fan of Trump's, everything he does, you know, just drives you crazy. But if you're a fan of Trump's, you're independent, people look to just go, yep, give me something new. Every 4 years, or certainly every 8 years, the country's kind of ready for that pendulum shift, which is why I don't know what's going to happen in 2020, 2024. If President Trump is still the president, you know, I think the odds remain very high that a Democrat takes over just because things are going so strongly in one direction. This country will be ready to shift the pendulum back.
Is Trump going to run?
Oh, I think he's already been running. I mean,
my point.
Many of his trips are already campaign trips.
And they are campaign speeches.
Yes.
So how about other Republicans? Who would they be? And who is going to be on the Democratic side?
Well, on the Republican side, I do believe you'll see him get challenged because he is so of a category to himself that there are a lot of traditional Republicans who believe that you just need somebody more standard. So a Jeff Flake, for example, Senator Jeff Flake, who's retiring in Arizona because he just can't. Here he is, kind of a relatively very conservative, but listen, he's voted with Trump 95-96% of the time, yet you'd still call him moderate compared to what he deals with. He is not ruling out a run. So whether, and I can't quite give you names right now because there's nobody really out there talking about it. You know, prior to what happened on the Democratic side with Al Franken, you might have seen Al Franken putting his hat in the ring. Now that's not going to happen. So, you know, it's hard to know at this point who it might be other than to say expect President Trump to get challenges from kind of the normal moderate wing. But he handled that very well in 2016, didn't he? He wiped out 16 other basically moderate, can't forget Ted Cruz and a couple of them, but you know, you had some pretty middle of the road folks who just couldn't manage. People just love the way he took them down. And Joe Biden, whoever it is, the nicknames will get into place and nobody can do it like Trump does it. And, you know, for a lot of people, certainly for a third of the country, that works.
What if Hillary Clinton is right and the Russians did interfere? Trump continues with his presidency because nothing can be proven, but there's more talk about it. The special prosecutor concurs that Russia did interfere, but doesn't prosecute anyone. Can that hurt Trump? Even if he's not, I mean, there's no mechanism, I don't believe, in the U.S. Constitution to pull a president unless he's actually prosecuted.
It's a complex question and a good question, and let me try and filter through a little bit. It is sort of unestablished law that you can't prosecute a president for anything that he does while he's president. Now, when Bill Clinton was president and there were those sexual harassment allegations against him, the Supreme Court unanimously said, you know what, you are not going to be protected from civil actions against you that happened before you were president. So if things happened, if Trump was involved in something tied to Russia or his campaign was prior to being president, then that precedent of the Supreme Court, that's criminal action you're talking about, not civil. So the question is, would it apply over? Don't know. Unclear. And secondly, it's also unclear among law professors, of which I was one, whether or not a president is subject to prosecution for a crime. There are some who say no. The Constitution says when you want to remove a president, you impeach them. That's the remedy. So some look and go, well, that's the only remedy. And some say, well, no, that's one. So it depends on how you, it hasn't been ruled on in a clear way. If evidence were found that was very, very clear, then certainly President Trump would face impeachment by Congress, but you have a Republican-controlled Congress. So would this Congress impeach him? Absolutely not. You already have Republican, more House members than senators, but House members already in line. Mueller's rotten, and Mueller's a Republican. What do you mean Mueller is this? He's a Republican. Forget that. They're going after, setting this up to basically say it's all a setup. It's all it's a hit job.
Is it?
This kind of thing.
Is it?
Personally?
Yeah.
I train the Department of Justice. I train prosecutors, okay? I deal with prosecutors. I don't think it's a setup at all. These guys do their job. They are not partisan in what they do. And by the way, when they do what you want them to do, then you don't think they're partisan. And if they do something you don't want them to do, then you think they're partisan. But I think Robert Mueller, you had Newt Gingrich. You had the staunchest of Republicans going, this guy's clean. It doesn't get better than this guy until he starts uncovering fire where there was smoke. Oh, no, no, no. He's got to go. He's got to go. So to me, the political piece are the attacks against Mueller. I have no problem with what he's doing and what he's finding. I'm not saying that as a Democrat or Republican. I'm saying that as somebody who understands the law and somebody who understands the role of the prosecutor. He's doing his job.
What if Mueller does find fire under the smoke, like you suggest? Is the FBI actually good? It seems as though the Republicans and Trump in particular are setting up the FBI to be the loser here.
It's really, so, it's incredible, actually. The attacks on our pieces of democracy, right? Now, again, if I'm a Trump person right now, I'm ready to write you and say that Listnick is so biased, whatever. I'm not speaking as a partisan person. I'm speaking as somebody who understands how the law works, all right? I am a lawyer. I understand how this works.
Well, you also know history, and I don't think there's nothing like this ever before.
No, nothing. I mean, people keep comparing it to Watergate. Some similarities, not a lot, but there are some. But no, this is just, we've never been in these charted territory. We've never had a commander-in-chief who's attacked the Department of Justice, the FBI, our own intelligence. You know, I mean, to me, I don't care what party you are. That's just about being American. You know, stand behind our own system of government and the pieces of our government. I don't understand how you attack it. And when you're the commander in chief, I don't understand how you attack it from the top. But again, I would say that regardless of party, I think we all need to be American. And by the way, CNN did some visiting recently of some Trump supporters, and almost to a person, they all went, nah, this whole Russia thing, I don't care about it. Even if it happened, it doesn't matter. I got my guy. We got the guy we wanted in. See, that's where the partisan piece comes in. If you're a Trump supporter, all of this stuff is very frustrating to you because you don't want to see it happen. I don't care if the president is Hillary or Trump or anybody else or Obama or whoever it is. The bottom line is, if laws have been violated and there's been collusion with a foreign country, if General Flynn, who's been charged with very, very little, actually did something tied to Russians, I mean, to me, that raises questions of potentially treasonous activity. Nobody's talking about treason. Nobody's saying that, which is why I think Flynn probably is offering a lot up, because he's been charged with very, very little. But my point is, this should be about protecting our country and democracy, and I don't care who the president is.
Is it all fake news, though? And that's what I want to talk to you about. So is Paul Listnick real, or is he fake? And your colleagues, I mean, do you go... And I don't work in politics. I'm not in a newsroom, even though I'm a part of the media. But I can't imagine that before you go on the air, 12 of you get together from all over the country and say, oh, we're going to talk about this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. How can that work? Is the media as left-wing as our president says? And I also want to talk to you about Illinois losing population and whether that's going to affect things here in this state when we come back. WGN Radio, Steve Dale here for Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. But we're talking politics at the moment with the guru of politics from WGN Television and CLTV, Mr. Paul Listnick, who says that this country's going to heck.
And you know, by the way, I worked with Wendy's sister, Betsy, for many years.
At the zoo?
No, she does do that. But
I know.
Actually, in the world of the Bar Review course, she's an editor. She's a writer.
Really?
Yeah.
And I have, this is true. I have somehow, I mean, we've had our picture taken together more times than either one of us can count, right?
Matthew Brady took the original ones of you, but go ahead.
Either you were on my show or I was, I'm ignoring you. Either you were on my show or I was on yours or something, and our picture was together. And my nephew writes me and says, I just took the Bar Review pre-exam course.
Yeah,
from that guy.
Yeah.
And that guy was really good.
I teach constitutional law. That's why we were talking about our previous conversation, right?
Yeah.
There is the lawyer part of me as well, and the former law professor part. I saw your sketch once on a cave. I was antiquing or something where they dig things up, and it was like, said Steve Dale. It was really nice.
On a cave.
A cave wall.
You were spelunking?
It was sort of a stick figure, but...
Okay. So, Mr. Listnick... We only have a couple minutes here, and I want to talk about the state of Illinois, and that would take more than a couple of minutes for sure.
Okay.
We're losing population.
We are.
And Chicago is losing population, but what isn't being talked about for Chicago is we gain with Gen Xers. So we're losing some people, and I would argue some of those people we've always lost as people get older, they move to Florida, they move to Arizona. So some of it isn't new, but some of it is new.
You know, when you talk to the current serving politicians, they'll, you know, everything's fine. Don't worry about it. That's not what happened. And they kind of say what you said. We've got young people. We've got technology.
That's true.
And I think Mayor Emanuel, you know, is certainly making an effort to bring those jobs in. Probably part of this is a natural transition of things in life. Look, you know, the jobs that our dads did when we were younger don't need to be, whatever they were, don't need to be done anymore. Because there's technology, people replaced by robots, even over at the TV station, right? I used to walk in the studio in the morning with, I don't know, 5 or 6 cameramen walking around. Now they're controlling all the cameras from a robotic arm, you know, way above.
It's very different. I don't believe he's answered my question at all.
So the answer is that, but we are losing population.
What are you talking about with robotic cameras? You're not answering my question.
Sure I am.
It's okay. Technology. Give it a try.
Yeah. You just remember the robot from Lost in Space. But anyway, my point is that things change. And so it is true that people of a different generation mm-hmm. have to either retool or find themselves out of work.
Is that all that's going on here?
But no, I think it's more than that. I think that we're being taxed to death. I think we're, you know, fees are going nuts and current politicians will justify why all this has to happen and how they were left with a bad deal. And it's all fine. I have to very quickly tell you, I was on the air a couple of weeks ago on the morning news about the tax plan. And I go back to my desk.
State tax plan?
About the
federal?
Federal okay. thing. Mm-hmm. And I go back to my desk and there's an email from somebody, we'll just say significant in the government, who said, "Hey, Paul, I just watched you on the air. You know what? We are so much better than Indiana. Indiana's terrible. They have high this, high that, whatever." And I responded back to this person saying, "Hey, thanks for watching. Glad you did that. But I don't live in Indiana. I live here. And so I don't find it comforting to know that I could move across the border and maybe have a worse time, according to you." Uh-huh. What I find is that living in this state is just absolutely, you know, very, very difficult in terms of the fees and property taxes and all the things that we have to pay.
Interesting you mentioned,
to fix it.
Interesting you mentioned that because other states have aggressively pursued people who live in Illinois saying, "Come here."
Well, they have, and they make commercials about that to go after
right.
Mike Madigan. Bruce Rauner has done those. But, you know, the bottom line to it is, look, if Mayor Emanuel were sitting here with us right now, he'd say, "Look, this is about pensions. This is about, did you realize what I was left with? You know, payments weren't made for decades, and I've got to deal with it." And he's right. So there is a reason we are where we are, but that doesn't negate the fact that we are where we are.
But it's
difficult for people to pay the bill.
Yeah, and we have like 30 seconds here or so, but that I don't know that really matters to people. And it's interesting that the tip of the volcano, so to speak, was the, and the big story of 2017 locally, the soda tax that came in
and
people were so mad. And it was just, if you think about it, it's not that much money. It's not, but it's just the idea that it was one more thing.
But to her credit, Tony Preckwinkle, who when that soda tax got knocked out, basically said, "Okay, fine. It's not like we're not going to do anything." She's like, "Now, cut $200 million from your budget, folks, because that money's not there." And that's what had to be done with some of the Republicans and some of the Democrat commissioners basically saying, "Look, we were able to do it. We did it. People lost jobs as a result. Don't be mad about that. You didn't want the tax. You had to give up jobs."
Well, I think people feel taxed to death.
I think they do.
Yeah, and that's the issue. Paul Lisnick, WGN-TV, CLTV. Thank you so very
Steve,
much.
Congratulations on 20 years. I wish you another, if you could possibly live another 20 years or 30, I wish you happiness. And you're one of the best on radio. You really are.
Well, thank you very much. And you're one of the best at what you do. In fact, you're the best at what you do. You know why?
Why?
You're the only one who does what you do.
Yes.
So how do I end this, Mr. Ferguson? It's 1 o'clock. Am I throwing it to anything? Just music. And I go away. I'm gone. Bill and Wendy, thank you so much. WGN, thank you very much. And Bob Ferguson, thank you very much for your knobs.